You just didn't turn on his video, I think.
Yo, what up?
Yo, one second. Let me get ready. Let me get ready. I had no idea it was going to be a video team.
Are you shirtless right now?
Maybe. No. I got that whole dad bod going on, bro. True, true.
It's no exposure here.
He's going full J.R. Smith mode.
All right, there
we
go.
Hey, okay.
I'm already ready to go, man. Got
this got changed.
I had to do it for the gram, bro.
Oh, I'm dead.
This is good.
Oh, yes.
Little display here.
That authentic memorabilia, man.
Oh, no doubt, man. And then also, I don't know if you can see.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, the tag and
everything.
You got the badge?
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. It came with it.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, man. So I have to get ready for that, you know what I mean?
Did you buy the fake ring, too?
Huh?
Did you buy the fake
ring? No, I actually went to the, I went to the home opener against the Pelicans, and they gave the replica rings out to the fans, so.
So you got that, too.
Scooped that up pretty quick. Oh, yeah.
That's
I mean, I got those tickets like last minute, man. Like, I think it was like about $300 a pop, like in the 300 level. Take that in.
Yeah, that's actually that's not bad, man.
But, and it's not bad though, but they didn't announce whether the fans were going to get rings or not until I think like 3 days before the game. I already had my tickets a week prior to that. So as soon as they announced it, the tickets went from 300 to 700. I was really considering flipping it, to be honest, but like that ring has sentimental value, man, so I had to go.
What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I got my... I'm going to consider you my pick and pop partner again. Man, Josh Cohen, how you doing?
Yeah, we can actually go outside again and play some basketball. It's nice.
Yo, I'm in town this weekend. You want to get some shots up?
We should do some social distancing shooting.
Sunday morning.
Nah, that I can't do. But we'll figure it out.
Oh, man. You're letting me down here.
We'll figure it out. Don't worry.
This guy. Banger in the paint. Rajan Walia, man. How you feeling? You're muted.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. I don't know how much banging in the paint I'll be doing just because we're still social distancing, but being outside, holding a basketball, that's all gravy for me.
Distancing in the paint.
Make basketball a no-contact sport.
Yeah, you know it, man. Bringing back friend of the pod, Fada Fada. How you feeling, man?
Hello, what's going on? Thanks for having me back again. It's always fun talking to you guys about basketball. As for social distancing, I'm going to have to let you know that I haven't followed those rules accordingly. This whole weekend I've been playing ball. Obviously, but I will say though, like 2 minutes in, I was like beat, man. So I gotta get my cardio up. But it's nice to finally, obviously in Ottawa, they're starting to ease up on the restrictions. So I'm hoping to bang out some more shots and hopefully hit some threes on you soon, Peter. We'll see when the time comes.
Were you playing real games?
Yeah, I mean, it started off with just shooting around until a bunch of guys came onto the court and then we started playing fours. For like an hour. I might have to go to the COVID testing labs to make sure. Really? But, nah, so far so good, man.
You're gonna have to bring masks and make sure everyone has them on when they're playing.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, so we're back. It's been a year, guys. A year since your Toronto Raptors have been the champions. We're recording on June 11. They were obviously champions on June 13. But you've had a year to soak it in, especially now with COVID. It's going to last even longer than the normal year, man. This is like a year at, what, 15 months in total that you're going to have this championship banner? I guess the banner is going to stay forever. But Larry O'B belongs to Toronto just a little bit longer. And we had to bring Fada back, obviously, to talk about this because it's a historic moment for Toronto sports. Let's just do it again, guys. Where were you? Game 6 last year. Fada, where were you watching this?
Game 6. Once again, back to the home of my buddy that I was watching Game 7 of the Philadelphia 76ers-Raptors game. We decided, hey, you know, we already established that as our good luck charm, so decided to watch Game 6 once again at my boy Niall's house. So Obviously, still some residue from game five and the kind of the down feeling after, you know, Kawhi started going off the last couple of minutes in game five. And then the like the Splash Brothers just coming in and just stealing like our hearts and our, yeah, just bringing back bad memories. But to say the least, I actually drove to Toronto for game five, anticipating a massive celebration, winning the championship at home, being in the crowd in the city with a couple of my friends. But obviously, we came up short. So my only scare when it came down to game six was, you know, being the last official game in Oracle Arena. I'm sure there's going to be some sentimental value as well as, you know, kind of like a good go-away gift for those Golden State Warriors fans, for the Golden State Warriors to win that game and force a game seven. So that I was kind of like hesitant on that piece, but I felt like the Raptors had to get it done in game six. They could not force a game seven because, again, we all know what happens to 3-1 leads in finals, and I don't want to be on the wrong side of history once again. So with that being said, in game six, at my buddy's crib, watching the game, going back and forth, Clay was going absolutely bonkers, man. So that kind of scared me a little bit. But the Raptors still, I think the one thing I noticed is the Raptors are able to weather the storm. Raptors teams of the past weren't able to kind of withhold such a crazy momentum shift, especially from their opponents, particularly the Golden State Warriors in Oracle Arena, right? They go on a 10-0 run, it's game over, basically, right? There's no way to kind of recover from that, but they were still able to kind of hang in there. And when you hang in there and you have Kawhi on your side, there's always a chance. So once they started to kind of pull away, when the Raptors started to pull away to win the game, there was a kind of anticlimactic moment towards the end of the game with the foul and then like reviewing the 0.9 seconds on the shot clock. And it was just like, it was anticlimactic because I was celebrating and then all of a sudden they just stopped. And then I kind of had to wait. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, if Kawhi misses one or two free throws, it's a 3-point game. Steph Curry can shoot from three quarters from the court. And then all of a sudden, like, it's overtime and back to game seven we go. So I was glad that Kawhi Leonard was able to hit the two free throws and, you know, seal the deal. So I was quite ecstatic. Definitely had some tears to myself in my car, considering all the moments I've gone through, especially with this franchise, the ups and downs, and finally able to be on the top of the world was definitely a good feeling.
Damn, that is quite the summary. Shouts to your boy Niles, man. Raj, where were you?
Yeah, so just like Fatah, I was in Toronto on Monday on Game 5, and I fully expected them to win. They were at that point up 3-1. I know KD was coming back, and like I was downtown at my cousin's place right beside Jurassic Park, and there was a moment where with like a minute and a half left, we're like, yo, let's go to Jurassic Park. We got this. It's going to be crazy. We got in the elevator. We like ran out the entrance. We ran to one of the screens, and then we just saw like the Splash Brothers take over. And honestly, I've never been in a place where like the energy in that city just deflated in like a minute. Just like a minute, everything was gone, and people started worrying. And I wasn't as confident in the Raptors closing it out in Game 6. I still think they had the edge in the series, but Game 6, I had to go back to my cousin's spot. And honestly, it was a bit anticlimactic because I think winning it in Toronto would have been just nuts, like nuts. But hey, first championship, you can't be picky. Being in the streets that day was probably one of the best moments of my life. And I'm not even as big of a Raptors fan as Josh and Fatah, so I can't even imagine. So I'm going to let Josh take it away.
Where were you, Peter?
Yo, I think we were together, man.
Isn't that right? You barely remember, huh?
Nah, dude. I would remember I was rushing into... Oddly enough, I was rushing to Ottawa because I had some family stuff to do that weekend. But I remember listening to the game for like the first 3 or 4 minutes of the first quarter, rushing my way to Josh's place just so we could sit in a dark basement and watch it together.
On my beautiful projector. But yeah, I mean, I think throughout the majority of the game, both you and your wife were like, shut the hell up, at least 50 times as I was like panicking throughout different points of the basketball game. And at the end, like I was like freaking out over like them sending Kawhi Leonard to the line because I was just saying like the ref should just end the game at this point just so we can not have to worry anymore. And then when Kawhi went to the line, I'm like, oh God, this is like, you know, Miami game six again, where he's going to miss a free throw and they're going to come down and hit some crazy shot. But luckily he hit both, and, you know, it was an awesome feeling. It wasn't as good of a feeling, honestly, as like the Kawhi shot for game seven against Philadelphia. But it was just a surreal experience, because I never thought within my lifetime I would see the Toronto Raptors win a championship.
Wait, you didn't trust Kawhi Leonard, the best player in the playoffs last year, to hit his free throws at the end of a game in game six?
As a snake-bitten Raptors fan, I always expected the worst.
This is Kawhi Leonard, though. It's not DeMar DeRozan.
Also, to add to that, though, like, Kawhi Leonard, like, he's a pretty decent free throw shooter, but I've seen key moments where, like, we needed a free throw and it just didn't seem to work out. For example, we can talk about the Game 7 shot, right, where Kawhi was actually in the free throw line. He was one of two. He split one of two before Jimmy Butler hit that layup in order to tie 90-90. So there's been a couple situations where, you know, the free throw hasn't been as good as we expected. But, I mean, he hit both when it mattered, which is, like, you know, the clinching game. And just to add to that, when it comes to, like, just the end of that game, there's a lot of stress going on, especially with the whole Danny Green turnover, which I'm sure we're going to be talking about later. My God, man. Like, my victimization of, like, being a Raptors fan just went through the roof. I'm like, oh, here we go. The league against the Raptors. Danny Green can't handle it no more. And, like, yeah, it was just, like, the one opportunity in which we can solidify a game just end up becoming even tougher. So I'm sure we're going to get to all those details later on, but I just want to put that tidbit out there.
No, man, Danny Green slander is always welcome here. I'm always here for Danny Green slander, man.
Yeah, Danny Green went 0-for-0 in 17 minutes and had 3 assists. So very productive play from him. But, you know, after that turnover, obviously they ran that play for Steph Curry and Ibaka had to switch out on him. And I thought for sure that shot was going in, just being, you know, a jaded Raptors fan. And then after the shot missed, I'm like, okay, they must have called a foul. And they didn't. So it was quite shocking.
Yeah. That was a Steph Curry routine three when you really think about it. Like, it wasn't even from that deep either. So yeah, we definitely caught a break there.
All right, let's bring this back. Let's go back to the Eastern Conference Finals against Milwaukee. Obviously, Toronto had just finished their 7-game series against Philly. You know, Kawhi hits a buzzer beater. And going into the series, were you guys actually confident with this team? Because I remember thinking to myself, there's no way this Toronto team would get past Milwaukee. I thought they were so gassed after going 7 hard games against Philly that, like, there was no way I thought they were going to get past them.
Yeah, like, I mean, when it comes to heading into the Milwaukee series, I thought that Toronto had some kind of momentum, because after that shot happened, it was kind of almost like a rejuvenation of energy from all the energy that they exerted throughout the 7-game series with the 76ers, right? So I felt like they came in with a new outlook heading into a series against an inexperienced Milwaukee Buck team. I did find that the Milwaukee Bucks could be a matchup issue, considering the fact that they had bigger guards like Bledsoe and Malcolm Brogdon coming back from injury too, with our miniature guards like Lowry and Van Fleet. I thought that might be a little bit of an issue. And obviously, considering Giannis, I thought that it was going to be a tough series for the Raptors to overcome, especially when they were down 0-2. I thought it was over, to be honest. But when we start to see things turn around, obviously, when the Raptors were able to take the 2 at home, and then the resurgence of Fred VanVleet Sr. and and the hot 3-point streak he was able to start off, and ultimately was enough to put the Raptors over the edge. So beginning of the series, I didn't have much confidence, but I believe after that game 3, which was a double overtime game, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That's when I kind of started turning things around, when Nick Nurse started to put Kawhi Leonard on Giannis as the primary defensive option. That's when things started to turn around for me.
I thought we were going to win the entire way, even after we were down 2-0. You can go back in the conversations. I said we were still going to win, just because after that Kawhi shot, I just thought it was destiny. It's like something out of a movie, honestly. I mean, when does that ever happen? And happen to us especially. Like, I was so confident going to the Milwaukee series, and I saw, like, the little things that they could have, you know, they could have done in game one especially. Game one, they should have won. Lowry had a big game, obviously, but they just made, like, mental mistakes down the stretch. And game two was just a write-off. But, you know, game three, obviously, Nick Nurse started to make the proper adjustments, like Fada was saying, and having Kawhi on him and then just sort of like clogging the lane with Gasol and Siakam helping out Kawhi anytime Giannis had the, you know, top of the key ISO. But my biggest thing was like stopping Brogdon. I thought he was like the biggest key in the series for the Raptors to slow down, and he's always been a Raptors killer. But they started to slow him down a bit as the series went on. But overall, the Raptors did a great job in like, you know, coming out of three-point shooters. Their defense was top-notch in the last four games especially. But honestly, I wasn't really that worried. I was more worried about Philadelphia, to be honest.
Damn, man. That's a lot of confidence for a Raptors fan.
Yeah, I wish I had that confidence, to be honest. But I want to give a shout-out to, obviously, the Eastern Conference reigning player of the week, Norman Powell, who had averaged more points than Chris Middleton, the second All-Star on that Milwaukee Bucks team in that series, just so you know. Yeah, you got Kobe Light off the bench there.
A bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Oh, man. Hey, man, that's why I'm here, man. Stretch four.
I like it. Yeah. Oh, man. Who was actually... Obviously, we know Giannis. We know that Josh already mentioned Malcolm Brogdon was the second threat, obviously. At points, Brogdon looked like the primary threat on that team, to be honest. Was there anyone else that you were actually worried about on this team?
Brooke Lopez's threes, man. That guy annoyed me, bro. Like, it's just, like, he's like the type that would start, like, his own 6-0 run for some, like, odd reason. I don't know how it happens. Marcus Gasol gets caught up, maybe, like, is caught up on a switch, and then all of a sudden, like, Brooke Lopez is open, like, right at the top of the three-point line hitting buckets, and I'm like, that's what we do not, like, obviously, I would like to have the ball out of Giannis's hands, but when they start hitting shots, obviously you're going to get frustrated, especially like, you know, the scrub players. It's like, oh man, like, I mean, if Giannis were to score those buckets, I would have been like, hey, you know, it's Giannis. He's a superstar. It is what it is. Like, I'll take it at the end of the day. But when you have guys like, you know, Brooke Lopez or even like Pat Connaughton, you know, like are hitting trays, it's like, yo, what is happening right now? Like, I could be on that Bucks team hitting trays too. You know what I mean? Like, that's how much trays they're getting, and it's just defensive breakdowns. But, I was kind of glad that obviously the Raptors needed bench help. I think that was the critical thing in the series. Larry was able to, again, like Josh said, had a big game in game one. Siakam did as well. But it was just very inconsistent support with Kawhi. And I felt like we needed an extra bump from the bench. And Norm Powell has been pretty good in that series, but not enough to kind of make a difference. So obviously with Fred VanVleet having a son and then kind of changing his focus towards the series itself definitely helped. And obviously, I think in total, in the whole series, I think he was like shooting like 80% from three after game three. So it was like nuts.
Yo, Raj, if I told you for you to have like the best games of your life, all you had to do was have a baby, would you do it?
Yeah, I would. I would ask to get twins because then I'd be like, what, Michael Jordan?
You can ride your baby high into the next season and continue to get buckets.
I know it was honestly night and day. Like I think people gloss over the fact that the Raptors were in double overtime against Milwaukee and they were what, one or two baskets away or one or two bounces away from being down 3-0, and I don't care how good of a team you are, if you're down 3-0 it against the number one seed in the conference, you're not coming back. So I thought that game, like over the entire run, is a game that most people forget that happened, but the Raptors grinded it out. And once they won that game, I really felt that that series was going to go seven games. I didn't think the Raptors were going to necessarily win, but I knew they were going to push to seven because it takes a lot of grit to fight off a team like Milwaukee. And Powell was very good. Van Vliet was awful that game. I remember yelling at Van Vliet. I'm like, why is he still playing? He was 1-for-11 that game. So thankfully he turned it up in game 4, 5, 6 and beyond.
Yeah, you got to appreciate Nick Nurse and his ideology, sort of going back to what Phil Jackson and, you know, Steve Kerr have done in the past as well. In that, you know, if a guy is struggling, you just stick with him, especially if it's a guy you trust. Because Van Vliet was obviously terrible the first two series. And, you know, he stuck with him. And, you know, when the baby popped out, you know, Van Vliet just took off. But in another sense, like, I feel like Budenholzer lost this series because he just didn't play Giannis enough. Because you're thinking, like, you're going to rest this guy for majority of the regular season, playing him 30 to 32 minutes a game. He should be playing 40-plus minutes in every single game in a series like this where you can reach the finals. And I think he only played 40 minutes in, like, two or three of the games. So what are you waiting for, you know? And then plus, I don't think they used Brook Lopez enough either, because he was the one guy that was just destroying us when we decided to, you know, switch a bunch of the pick and rolls. Like, he would just, you know, back down from the three-point line in a slow, methodical way that he does and just shoot over whichever small guy was on him. And it was working, especially in the fourth quarters. Like, the first game, he, I think he scored, like, 10-plus points in the fourth quarter. And then the game six, he, I think he had at least 6 or 8 points. But he was killing us inside, just, you know, being the molasses-type center that he was. But I think that, in a way, like, Nurse did a great job, and I think it did come down to coaching overall.
Right. The one thing I wanted to add to that, like, or maybe just ask you guys this question is, in game six, when the Raptors were down, what, I think it was like 61 to 76 in the third quarter. How was your confidence thinking that, like, the Raptors would be able to pull out of that game and actually win? Cause for me, like, they were down 15 midway through the third quarter. And I think, like, Giannis sat out for a bit. So obviously, thanks to Mike Budenholzer, like, he wasn't able to make that necessary adjustment. And then the Raptors went on that miraculous run and then never looked back. So I want to ask you guys, where was your confidence level when the Raptors were down 15 midway through the third quarter of game six?
According to Josh, they were going to sweep them. So sounds like Josh is very confident in this.
Of course. I mean, after seeing what we did in game seven against Philadelphia, being down 10 points in the third quarter, at that point I was like, you know, since we won that game, I just had no doubts that we could win this game as well. I mean, 10 points in that game felt like 25 because it's such a grind against the 76ers in game seven. Whereas, you know, against Milwaukee, it's more of a free-flowing game. And I felt like, you know, after seeing what Kawhi did in game seven against Philadelphia, that he was going to be able to do the same type of thing. And Kawhi went on that massive run in the third quarter. He's scoring a bunch of points in a row, and he brought us back in. And then, you know, the fourth quarter, there was a bunch of different contributing players, obviously, off the bench as well. So it was more so, you know, team effort versus a one-man effort, which was what Game 7 ultimately was.
Yeah, because Kawhi sat out for most of that 26-3 run that the Raptors pulled in Game 6. Like, he re-entered the game, like, probably like with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and the Raptors were already like, I think, like, up two with nine minutes to go. Yeah. So, like, yeah, it was just nuts to see the teams kind of like gather themselves together while not having their superstar on their side at that time playing against Giannis at this point. So I think that's what kind of turned around for me from a confidence standpoint, that the Raptors may have the ability to go all the way. Right. Obviously able to, you know, like Josh said, able to get out of that 10-point deficit in game seven against Philly, and then to get out of this 15-point deficit and actually take the lead and closing out a series in six against the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. I thought that the sky was a limit for the Raptors, and, you know, moving forward, they had the ability to move all the way to the championship.
Yeah. Just to build off of what you said, Fata, like, I think one thing that helped the Raptors is, because Kawhi actually sat out quite a few regular season games, and the team was still very productive. Like, they were still very competitive against some of the top teams, and they had that confidence that they could compete with the best. And just from a coaching standpoint, I think one thing the Raptors did a great job of in this entire season, a series, was they kind of limited Milwaukee's transition points, like easy baskets. They made Giannis work for everything. They made him, like, make decisions late in the clock. And I think that was, like, one of the things that really changed the series is the Raptors played, they controlled the pace of the game. They didn't let Milwaukee impose their will. They didn't let Milwaukee get on the break and let Giannis running at the rim because there's no way of stopping him then. So I think they did it before without Leonard, and they were able to control the game, and that's why they were able to pull out from a 15 or 16 point deficit.
How much does sitting Danny Green's bum ass have to do with it? Danny Green gets a whopping 14 minutes this game. Meanwhile, your boy Fred VanVleet goes 5-6 with 33 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like more so of Nick Nurse trusting Danny Green and his veteran presence in the lineup, but I felt like once he started noticing that Danny Green was still not being able to produce at the level that he's accustomed to producing in, for example, the NBA Finals, he was able to make that adjustment in the second half by putting in VanVleet to start off the second half. And that ultimately kind of limited, obviously, the Raptors' opponents, such as, you know, the Warriors and whoever from taking over, especially in the third quarter. Like, if I talk about the Warriors are one of the best, if not the best, third quarter team in the NBA, right? So the fact that they're able to recognize that defensive adjustment by putting VanVleet on Steph right from the beginning of the second half was able to kind of solidify the Raptors' momentum, or at least weather the storm if they were down, and give themselves a chance to win the game. So when it comes to Danny Green and his presence in the Bucks series, I mean, it was irrelevant, but they were still able to pull through with VanVleet's production off the bench.
Do you guys think that Toronto would have won if they had actually hired Coach Budenholzer during the last summer?
Hell no.
He's the white version of Dwayne Casey. Can't make adjustments. He's a classic guy that brings 60-win teams into the playoffs and then basically flat out lose. Like, for example, you could talk about even the Atlanta Hawks 60-win team, right? They go in and you see Jeff Teague talking that talk to LeBron the first game. Say, hey, not this year. We're not getting swept this year. Then get swept again by the Cavs. So, like, they just don't understand. I guess he just doesn't understand when to make the adjustments. And when he does make the adjustments, it's already too late. So that's why I appreciate a coach like Nick Nurse coming in and kind of having that open mind, obviously with his extensive coaching experience. It may not be NBA coaching experience, but if you know the game, you know the game, right? So, you know, obviously there's some things that didn't work for him, but there's some things that really helped us as well. So I'm willing to kind of take that extra step and, you know, just try something new. And if it works, it works. Like, for example, the boxing one, right? In that Golden State series, I never seen the boxing one since middle school. So, like, you know what I mean? The fact that grown men are playing that, even zone was even hard to see even in college. Like, for example, I think Syracuse was maybe the one of few teams that actually used the zone defense all the time, right? So when you see like an NBA team, particularly like, you know, superstars or whatnot, playing the same defenses that you played in middle school, it's kind of been like, whoa, you know what I mean? It's kind of cool to see, but at the same time, it's what's going on, right? But if it works, it works. So that's why kind of Steph Curry, he felt some type of way about it, you know, kind of throwing shade at the Raptors. Oh, they're kind of using a boxing one. You know, I haven't seen that since middle school. Janky defense. Like, it worked, right? He may drop 47, but it didn't do much, right, in game three. So, I definitely salute Nick Nurse on his openness to make adjustments, because after seeing Dwayne Casey over the last 6 years not making any adjustments is brutal. So I'll leave it at that. No to Mike Budenholzer. Hell no.
Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. Super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. Oh, God. All right, let's move on. Game one of the finals. You got Golden State, who had just, correct me if I'm wrong, they swept Portland last year, right?
They did.
Yeah. Swept them with ease. No KD. Didn't need them. Doesn't matter. KD's still out. Doesn't matter going into the finals. How confident were you going into game one? Because, I don't know, man. This team that was going for a three-peat, you know, they've won, what was at that point, 3 out of 4 years already. Obviously, with that core, you got the veteran presence with Iguodala and Livingston are still around. Obviously, Splash Brothers, Draymond, the list goes on. We all know the roster. And going into game one, man, I'm not going to lie. I was very hesitant to say that Toronto would win. So just to summarize this, I was not confident in Toronto for all three series that we've talked about. I'm really living that Toronto skeptic life, but I don't know, Raj, like, were you confident in this team?
I thought that it would be a good series. I think the Warriors obviously had the experience of going to 4 straight finals prior to that, but missing KD is a huge piece, and like, this Warriors team wasn't as deep as any of the other teams. Like, their bench was older. Iguodala was older. They just didn't have that same explosion, that second unit. And obviously, you have the Splash Brothers that are going to put up probably 60 points a game on you. But where was going to be that tertiary scoring? Like, you can't really rely on Draymond. They don't really get much production out of their centers. And, you know, Iguodala might have 1 or 2 games, but I just felt the Raptors were always going to be in the games, and they were a very good team defensively. I thought it was going to be a long series. I thought it was going to be 6 or 7 games, and I think I was like 50-50. I wasn't confident in one team over the other, but I think the Raptors had the formula to beat the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, for me, just looking at how Houston played Golden State and switching everything, I thought that we could play the same type of style, and going back to how smart Nick Nurse has been over the course of the playoffs to that point, I thought that, you know, if they had a pick and roll with Gasol, for example, they would just be able to trap it. And going back to what Raj said, Golden State doesn't have many guys you have to worry about outside of Curry and Thompson since Durant is out, so you want all these other guys like, you know, McKinney and Iguodala and Draymond to shoot as many threes as possible. So we brought a lot of that defensive structure and scheme towards that series. And because Golden State maxed out on, you know, their 4 main guys and didn't really have a lot outside of them, we could really take advantage of that strategy. And I thought going into things, like, we had the personnel to be able to switch a lot of, you know, screen roles, and also off the ball plays where, like, the big man has to switch out on Clay coming around a screen, you know, from the bottom. And guys like Siakam and Kawhi Leonard were able to do so, even though, like, Kawhi, he looked injured in the first couple games, because when Curry got him on an ISO, Curry just destroyed him in a few different plays. But overall, I think that strategy ultimately worked, obviously, but we had the personnel to be able to match up with them without KD.
Yo, how dare you slander Quinn Cook?
He had a couple moments.
Yeah, he had a couple of threes.
Yeah, so like for me, obviously I had some confidence, but at the same time, there was still a lot of unknown coming into game one, right? First thing, I see a Woj tweet, DeMarcus Cousins is clear for game one. I'm like, oh no, you know what I mean? And then like the whole
team, that was a good thing for us.
Yeah, but I just didn't know, you know, obviously like anything happens to the Raptors for a reason, right? So like that's on my team. I don't take anything and just put a negative connotation towards it, right? So DeMarcus Cousins was cleared. Then they said, okay, KD obviously ruled out for game one and game two, but could come back for game three. So like they were just like throwing all these little tidbits out there, and I'm like, you know, I'm already my head spinning. But coming into game one, especially having home court advantage, I felt really helped, right? Also on top of that, the whole game one aura with the Raptors organization, that's another thing we gotta think about as well, right? So you can see that I was kind of like, you know, out and about mentally. But once game one started to come, I started to realize, okay, we definitely have the pieces to do so. Also on top of that, OG Anunoby's status was still up in the air because he was medically cleared, but like we didn't know if he was like ready to play on the court, right? So that would have been another piece to add to the finals roster, which I feel would be beneficial, right? But fact of the matter is, the team as is, I felt like we had the pieces to take down Golden State. And obviously going through a grueling long series with the Bucks definitely continued that momentum that we had heading back since the game 7 of the Philly series. Like I said, you know, I feel like when a team rests for so long, you start to get rusty early in the series, right? So you got to catch them when they're slipping, you know? So with game 1, obviously the Raptors were able to show up and kind of, you know, continue that momentum. And Siakam had a fabulous game. I think he was like 32 points, I think like 12 for 15 from the field. And mind you, the Raptors first time on ABC in like what? Since like Vince Carter days, man. Like I haven't seen Mike Breen hit a bang on you know, on the Raptors. Like I remember, I think Kyle Lowry had like a three with like, I think like 2 minutes or a minute left in the fourth, and the game was virtually over. And then when I heard Mike Breen go bang, and I'm like, okay, perfect. That's what I needed, man. That's, you know, but, no, it was a beautiful game end to end. And I feel like, that's when kind of the emergence of Siakam took another leap, right? Cause now he's on a national stage, even a global stage, mind you, right? Where everybody's watching the finals, kind of seeing what this Golden State Warriors will do. Cause there's a lot of question marks with them. I felt like there's a lot of respect from the Raptors after they were able to solidify game 1.
Pascal Siakam went 14 of 17 from the field that game. 82.4%. 2 of 3 from the 3. This dude, it was that third quarter, right? Because he just kept getting open every time. And he would just slash through every defender there. And I remember there were a bunch of plays where they switched like Steph onto him. And it was like, it's like this guy was playing with like a high school kid. What are you doing?
Right. And then like Draymond Green's comments after the game, he's like, oh yeah, we didn't know who Siakam was, but we know him now. I'm going to guard him. Like, not like he got that, like in game 1, he got literally like 20 points on his head, you know? So he's trying to like brush it off saying, oh yeah, we didn't know. We didn't scheme for him. Like trying to throw shade at his 32-point game. So obviously Draymond Green knew what was going on, and I guess like he just needed a way to deflect that that warning sign that the Raptors were coming for them.
Yeah, bro, aren't you supposed to be one of the best defenders in the league? You don't know this like second or third best player on the another team in the finals? Are you kidding me?
She got destroyed by a dude that was going to turn into a priest at age 17. You know what I mean? Like I don't know what to tell you, man.
Draymond Green, the furthest thing from a priest. Check his Snapchat history, dog.
Oh my god. We gotta have a podcast just on those players that leak things like that. We got an all-starring lineup, start off with Jamal Murray.
Oh no. Where would you put D'Angelo Russell exposing his own boys?
Head coach.
Yeah. Raised sixth man of the year. I don't know, man.
All snake team with that guy, man.
All snake team, yeah. Him, KD.
Alright, so game 1 goes by. You obviously got Siakam popping off. What happened in game 2 that the Raptors actually lost? Because I'm not going to lie. I was on my way out of the country. I was going on vacation the night before game 2, so I didn't see it. Or I think I saw it at like 3 or 4 a.m. But
I was there at the game, unfortunately.
What did Steph and Clay just pop off?
It was the worst $1,100 investment.
Woo! Oh no!
Because my logic was this: I'm like, okay, the Raptors won game 1. Let me grab a ticket for game 2. Worst case, they lose. At least they go back to Oracle tied 1-1. At least, like, if they lost game 1, I wouldn't go to game 2 because I don't want to be like 0-2 feeling heading towards Oracle, you know what I mean? So I decided, hey, let me just grab a ticket. So me and my boys actually drove down to go watch game 2, and the city was buzzing. Everybody was like, okay, we're up 1-0, 3 more to go. We take care of business at home. Anything can happen. We split on the road. It'd be nice, right? So what ended up happening was the Raptors were kind of like toe-to-toe with Golden State, and Clay showed up that game. I'll tell you that much. Like he was going ballistic. And I think at halftime, the Raptors were only down. No, they were up 5. It was like 59-54. And mind you, at that time, man, it was still Ramadan. So I'm like fasting and I'm hungry. Like at this point, it's my time to break, right? So, you know, it's halftime. I go to the bathroom, long lineups. You know what I mean? Then I go to the concession stand, grab my food, finally about to break my fast. At this point, it's like 6 minutes into the third quarter. That's how much I wasted just lining up. By the time I got back, it was literally like an 18-0 run by the Golden State Warriors. I think when I got to my seat, it was Quinn Cook that hit like a and-one-three, and like Steph Curry like jumping on him and like bench. And I'm like, what just happened? I was talking to the guys next to me. I'm like, what the hell just happened? They're like, yo, dude, I don't know. Maybe you're the bad luck. You know, you left, and then all of a sudden the Raptors' hopes just went out the window. You know what I mean? I'm like, damn. Then at that point on, the Raptors started to chip away. And that's when Danny Green started to hit a few shots down the stretch. And I think the Raptors were, at this point, they were only down two. I think they were down two. And all they had to do is stop the Golden State Warriors' offensive possession. And it was a broken play, and I think Sean Livingston passed the ball to Iggy, and Iggy hit the three to put them up five, and then that was all she wrote. So that was definitely a heartbreaking game, to say the least. But it was that third quarter where the Golden State Warriors were able to stir up, I think it was like a 13-0 run or 18-0 run, mostly by Steph and Clay. And I think Draymond had a couple of backdoor layups, you know, that classic Golden State Warriors play where Draymond Green kind of drives in and then kind of throws an alley-oop over to the person that's cutting baseline. So Iguodala was a recipient, as well as DeMarcus Cousins. So ultimately, it was a team effort for them, and they kind of stole game two. So,
yo, Fada, how about I tell you? I have the exact same story with the concessions and being away for like half of the third quarter, except it was in game one. So I missed Pascal popping off for like 10 or 12 points in that third quarter. And I was watching it on the TVs. I was like, yo, are you serious? Like, Can we get this ball growing here? I'm just trying to move, man.
How's the atmosphere of game one when you were in the arena?
It was
crazy. I'm sure like it was bumping, eh?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was the wildest thing I've ever been around. Like no one, yo, the shirts are sick. I'm not gonna lie. The shirts are by far the best shirts I've seen from the Raptors.
That was the other thing too, because when I got the tickets for game two, I'm like, okay, well, game one got those shirts, game two will definitely have some sick shirts too. They ended up going back to that We the North t-shirt. I'm like, are you kidding me? It was like a red We the North t-shirt.
No.
It said like NBA Finals game two on the side, and I'm like,
that's it. Oh man. The game one shirts had all the logos from the Raptors in the past. And it was like a long sleeve. It was black. Oh man, that's a sick shirt. It's still one of my favorites.
Cool.
Cost me $800 for that shirt, but it was worth it.
Did you sell it?
I tried to. Dude, you want to buy it off of me?
Yeah, I'll buy it off of
you. I'll give you $10.
Monthly payments.
Monthly payments. That's a layaway plan, man. 0% interest in everything.
Yeah.
Did you guys realize that except for game one, the away team won every game in this series? Game two goes to Golden State, 3 and 4 at Oracle goes to Toronto. And then game five, obviously you got KD coming back. Everything's popping off in Toronto. He obviously hurts himself, like pops his Achilles early in the game, but they managed to hold on for that victory. And then game six in Oracle, it goes back to Toronto. How wild is that? I don't think I've ever seen a finals that's, I get not one-sided, but you know what I mean? That's like gone in that fashion where you would expect the home team to have more energy, you know what I mean? Or more pop behind
advantage.
Them. Yeah.
Right. And I feel like it was kind of weird too, because a lot of these home games throughout the course of the NBA finals were kind of close, right? It could have gone either way. Like it was pretty much decided within the last minute of the fourth quarter. Like, we can talk about, for example, game three when Van Fleet hit that deep three that kind of put the Golden State Warriors away with like a minute 20 left or something. And then game four, obviously, it was an ugly game until Kawhi Leonard in the third quarter started like picking up some steam. And even then, that was like kind of close. And then obviously game five in Toronto, they lost by one. And then game six, they lost by, sorry, the Raptors won by four. So like the margin of victory was so small that like it could have gone either way. So I found that even more unique as well, on top of the fact that you mentioned.
Yeah. Okay, I gotta ask you guys, be honest with me, because I just want to know how you felt about this. When KD goes down, what are you thinking? Raj, what, like,
I was cheering. I was cheering because I was completely I was invested in the Raptors. I wanted them to win. I wanted to have a great time on that Monday. He was killing the Raptors. And if he had played like that for the rest of the series, like game 5, 6, and 7, how, like, it would have just ruined it. Like, I would have been watching, like, one man come from the dead and destroy the team that literally fought through all the odds, like, had to win the game 7 on a last-ditch shot. And I just couldn't see that happen. And I obviously wasn't cheering for him to get hurt and, like, be permanently injured, like, tear his Achilles. But I was just like, get out of the game. Even, like, miss a week. That's all you need. But I cheered.
Just sprain your ankle. Don't work the Achilles into this injury.
I feel like you're not telling us that you were actually at that game and you were actually one of the fans cheering as he went down.
I 100% would have cheered if I was at the game, but
he probably had
I don't have the money to.
Yeah, I think with KD, it was funny, man, because he started picking up steam right off the get-go. I think like he scored like what, like 11 points or something. And at that point, I'm like, oh my lord. I was sitting in a restaurant with some friends in Toronto and I'm just like quiet and everyone's kind of like enjoying themselves. I saw a lot of like fair weather Toronto fans around. So like they weren't really focusing on the game. But for me, I was so like zoned in and just like being a Debbie Downer, right? And then when KD went down with that injury, all of a sudden, like, you know, my appetite started to open up. I started ordering food. I'm like, yo, here we go. Let's eat. You know what I mean? I'm ready to go. Like, get this energy in at least because I know the Raptors were going to win that game. I can go celebrate the championship with some energy, you know? But I always thought, man, with KD coming back, if he were to maintain his health and play all three games that ended up winning for the Golden State Warriors, how his outlook on his legacy would change, right? Because they were still down 3-1, regardless of who your opponent is. Being down 3-1 is definitely something difficult to overcome, right? So with KD coming in, and let's say he wins game 5, 6, and 7, I wonder how people would look at his legacy moving forward now that, you know, obviously he went to the Golden State Warriors, a 73-19. Like, how would they look at him as a premier player in this league, you know?
You know, knowing Golden State, they would still shit on him and say Steph is their guy no matter what.
But I don't know why he was salty about that too. I noticed, I'm like, obviously they're obviously going to back up Steph Curry. He's been there from time. He's been their player like that grew up in that system. So obviously they're going to love him more than he loves you. You know what I mean? Like, I never understood why like he felt that type of way. But the thing is, I do understand on the other side that, hey, you're the second best player in the league. I demand that respect, right? But if you're going to a team that's already, you know, a championship pedigree team with a player that's well-liked by not only his team, but the rest of the league, it's going to be hard to compete with that. You know what I mean? So if you know you're the second best player in the league, just do it on the court. Just let your game speak for itself. Don't let the guys, don't let these quote-unquote blog boys get to you. You know what I mean?
He's a fragile mind, man. You know what I mean? Like, he's it's odd. It's like a lower self-esteem than you would expect from the second best player in the league. Or maybe not self-esteem, maybe that's not the right word, but like the opinion of himself is like kind of jaded. You know what I mean? Like, he just expected everything to come to him as soon as they won that first championship. And then it was like, yo, you took the easy way out.
Yeah, I mean, he can't deny that, right? You know, going to a 73-9 team that already won a championship and we're literally a minute away from winning that 2016 championship. Yeah. You add a player of KD's caliber, obviously people are going to look sideways, right? And people, I listened to something recently where they're kind of looking to KD's psyche when he left OKC. He kind of thought that he could pull the same thing LeBron did when he left to Miami, right? Because he paired up with guys that were basically top two, if not top in their position, respectively, in their primes, right? And yeah, he may have had flack in his early Miami days, but they started to accept them, right? So I feel like he probably thought that he would get that same attention and that same love maybe after his first year in Golden State, but it seems as though, you know, it didn't work that way. And obviously, you know, it is what it is.
There can only be one LeBron, man.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, were you cheering when you saw that injury? Don't lie.
I was not cheering. No, I was very concerned. And I'm actually not joking.
Oh. Please.
Oh, come on.
I was definitely not cheering, though, because I actually wanted us to beat them with KD so nobody could say that there's an asterisk or whatever they're going to say after we do beat them without him. So I was hoping that he would play in the last two games. And, you know, obviously in the first quarter when he was torching us, it felt awful. And it felt like, you know, that moment in Waterboy when the team started to struggle again, and then you like see Rob Schneider in the crowd and he's like, ah, we suck again. That's what it felt like.
Damn, man. When was the last time you referenced Waterboy?
It's been a while.
How do you
underrated classic, though.
Jesus.
No, I was going to say, didn't KD call out the Raptors fans, too, saying that this is the last time they're ever going to be in the finals? Did that happen during the finals or after? I can't remember.
I think it happened after the injury.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah,
no, I meant, like, after the finals or during the finals. I think after the injury, you said, right? Yeah, because he felt some type of way about it for sure, I know, in that series. But I can't remember if those comments happened then or happened after the Raptors won the championship.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know he wasn't feeling it when everyone was cheering for him. And I think it was... I felt like even like Serge Ibaka even said things started to change literally seconds after everyone started cheering. Everyone's like, oh, damn, like he was actually hurt, right? So I think Serge Ibaka was trying to kind of give KD's like, hey, give the Raptors fans a benefit of the doubt. Obviously, you know, when you see a guy like of his caliber leave the game, regardless of what happens, it's a good thing, right? But when it comes to like the injury and what actually happened, obviously, I don't think those 20,000 fans would be sick enough to be like, oh, I'm glad he's hurt. I'm glad, like,
he's except for Raj.
Yeah. So, right? Like,
I wasn't there.
Sure.
Yeah. But to even like think that 20,000 people are actually going to say, I really am genuinely happy that he got hurt, I don't think that's realistic. And I feel like that's a poor man's mentality on his part. So, yeah. I don't know. That's KD's personality.
I don't blame him, man. If I got hurt and I saw 20,000 people cheering me on when I'm hurt, or like applauding the fact that I got hurt, I'd be salty too, no matter what. No matter if they were like, oh, sorry, we didn't realize you were hurt that badly or whatever. Like, even if I have a rolled ankle, come on, man. Where's the sportsmanship?
Yeah, but I think it's a little naive to think that no fan base in the NBA in the world would think like that. Like, you're at another team's venue.
Yeah.
They're hoping to win the championship. They're not cheering your injury. They're cheering their odds have increased to win.
Exactly.
And they're cheering that because you're such a dominant player that you sway the odds a lot. Like, you're not like going from like the Raptors' odds when KD went down were like 70%. But when he was playing, it was like maybe 50-50, maybe even less. So I think like the fans, I don't blame them. I think, yeah, sure, like they booed and that's not nice, but I think overall, like, you have to look at the whole picture of how the Raptors fans are. And I just wanted to mention something kind of on a side, like, while that play happened, I think a lot of the casual fans didn't pick up right away what had happened, because like KD was dribbling, he was trying to take Ibaka off the bounce, and then he just went down, right? And then Ibaka took the ball and I think he went down for a slam. And right away, like, as soon as I saw that, like, I wasn't even paying attention what happened with Ibaka. I just saw that KD was down, and I'm like, oh, shit. And I wasn't like, yeah, stay down, like, be injured. But I'm like, oh, shit, like, this is great for the Raptors. Like, you know what I mean? But that sucks for him.
Oh, man. It's okay, Raj. We know how you really feel. What about
again, no shame, no shame.
Raj is one of those guys in fantasy basketball that cheers for the other team's players to get injured.
Wait, before we go to game six, can we talk about that Kyle Lowry shot in game five? Because he got slandered. Like, I mean, like, absolutely slandered for that shot. And people thought, like, he just missed completely. But when you actually look at the photo and look at the instant replay, Draymond Green got a little fingertip on that ball, right? And obviously, people look at, obviously, the finals in a global scale, especially a national scale here in the U.S., right? They see Kyle Lowry as, you know, the flame-out Kyle Lowry in the playoffs, right? Like, that's all they know, right? So when they see that shot, they're like, oh, of course Kyle Lowry would miss that completely, right? But then when you actually look at the replay, you see, like, there's a little tip. It was blocked onto game six. But for game five, if Kyle Lowry were to hit that shot, if you were to hit that shot, I feel like that would have been the best storybook,
yeah,
in terms of like storybook ending for a Raptors player of any caliber like Kyle Lowry. Like, it was like unbelievable. It would have been like, you know, coming into the Raptors organization, flaming out in the playoffs a couple times, always, you know, not meeting expectations when games get tough, to hit the biggest shot in your career and also hit a buzzer beater in the postseason, similar to what Kawhi Leonard did to win the series. So that would have been pretty neat.
He would have been the first player in history to have a statue built outside the stadium while he's still playing.
Like this year, by the All-Star break, it's already up.
No doubt.
Designed by Josh.
Best point guard in history if he hit that shot.
The statue with the fattest ass ever.
Yeah, literally.
The statue falls because of it.
I know Peter will definitely be taking pictures of that when he goes downtown.
I'm going to be slapping that ass.
selfie with the statue there.
Holding up Kyle Lowry's ass. Oh, man. All right, game six, guys. Back at Oracle. Last game in Oracle. This is like 50, 60 years of history going down. And let's be real. Danny Green just takes out Klay Thompson. We got to cut straight to the point here. If Klay didn't get hurt, this series could have gone to 7 very easily. This guy was already 8 of 12. He already had 30 points by the time he got hurt by like the end of the third quarter. You know what I mean? This guy got hurt. He, what was it? Was it his ACL?
ACL, yeah.
Towards ACL and still shot the free throws. That was like, remember when Kobe popped his Achilles and then still took the free throws? That was that. Except Klay tried to play defense. This guy was walking back on defense as if it was normal. My God.
Yeah, this whole series made me rethink Klay Thompson, how good he is. Because before, I didn't think that he could have been, you know, a key guy on a great team. Just as like the main guy, sort of like a Reggie Miller type role.
Yeah.
But after this series, I'm like, this guy's way better than Allen Houston. This guy's way better than Reggie Miller. It's not even close.
He's definitely better than Allen Houston and Reggie. Is he better than Ray Allen?
I think he's better than Ray Allen too.
He's a better shooter than Ray Allen. Because the only thing I hold Ray Allen over Klay Thompson, Ray Allen could create his own shot, especially when it came to when he was playing with Milwaukee and playing with Seattle. He was able to create his own shot. And then he ended up becoming kind of a spot-up shooter in like that Boston system after the fact. So that's the only thing I hold Ray Allen over Klay. But when it comes to shooting, spot-up shooting and defense, obviously Klay takes a cake on that.
Yeah, Klay was doing some stuff in this series, though. Like when Siakam got switched out on him, you would think that Siakam would have the advantage, and he was cooking him off the dribble, which was sort of surprising.
Yeah.
Klay got moves, man. Where the hell did he pick up that?
Yeah, but that wasn't dirty on Danny. I think he was going for the ball. He was trying to make a basketball play. And that one, I had no reaction. No cheering, no nothing. I was like, that sucks. Like, it didn't look as bad on the first replay. It just looked like he landed funny, but
I feel like Raj found that, like, horn that, you know, radio hosts always go to when there's, like, a big event. And he started, like, blasting that throughout his house.
What the hell?
Man, like, Klay was going absolutely bonkers. Man, that whole series, I kid you not, if Golden State were to win that series, Klay Thompson would have stole the finals MVP from Steph. Imagine Steph, every single finals he's been to, he's never been the finals MVP, and I feel like that narrative would have got even crazier if Golden State Warriors were to win that series, because Steph Curry was not playing well, in my opinion. Like, he did have some spurts where he played fine, but what you expect from Steph Curry, especially in a situation like the finals, he wasn't there. Klay Thompson was a constant that kept them afloat when he was playing, right? I know he was injured in game 3, and that's when Steph scored like 47 points, but he was literally the only focal point on offense, right? With game 6, I mean, yeah, I guess we can talk about that first quarter, right? You know, what had happened there with Kyle Lowry and just going off. Obviously, he's heard the slander for the 2-day break between Game 5, Game 6, and he's watching First Take, watching Undisputed, watching all these shows, and talk about Kyle Lowry, here we go again, and all of a sudden, right through the floodgates, he drops 11 points. No, was it 11 or 15? I think 15 points in the first quarter, if I'm not mistaken.
15, yeah.
Yeah, but he scored 11 straight the first 11 points of the Raptors in the beginning of the game. I think like he started pulling up from three, started driving in, and I think Looney, okay, he was like on and off. Like this guy was like ruled out for the series at one point, and then like he came back. I was just so confused, and then, like that kind of added to like the question mark of the Golden State medical team when they put KD back on the floor in Game 5. So when I saw Kevon Looney in Game 6, I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like this guy was ruled out with like literally like a collarbone fracture or something like that, and now he's like playing defense on Serge Ibaka. Like anyway, he ended up, Lowry was cooking, and you know, I felt like that kind of set the table for the Raptors to, you know, continue that momentum off Lowry's back.
Yeah, that was the start that he needed, right? To solidify his place in Raptors history, and two, the team really needed it. I mean, the rest of them, from what I remember, no one else was really popping off in that first quarter, right? It was all just running off of Lowry. So, I mean, without that 15-point spurt, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, and also after coming, like after a game five that was super deflating, Lowry obviously getting slandered, as Fata mentioned online, about like almost airballing the potential game-winning shot, obviously was blocked, but he needed to have a good start, and the Raptors needed some energy going into Oracle last game ever there. So he really stepped up, and that was what the Raptors need to know. Hey, look, we've done this twice before. We can do it one more time.
Yo, guess how many minutes Pascal Siakam played in that game 6?
Oh, I already know this. I think he's 43.
Anybody else?
45.
I'm cheating, so I'm not going to answer.
46 minutes and 10 seconds.
Damn.
My man sat a minute and 50 seconds. That's crazy.
Bro, that's that African endurance, bro. I'm telling you. We can run for days, my friend. We can run for days.
It's a marathon.
This guy in transition, off he goes, bro. But no, but the thing is, the one thing I found from game 6 that was revealing was the fact that it was a total team effort. You know, when you look at Raptors' success last year, the first thing people think about is Kawhi Leonard, right? They don't really think about the team that's assembled around him, right? And the fact of the matter is, when the Raptors close out game 6 and ultimately win a championship, and you look at the box score, you could see just the balanced attack, right? When you're looking at Lowry bringing you 26 and 10, and you see Pascal giving you 26 points as well. And then Van Fleet, I guess we'll talk about probably soon, his spurt in the fourth quarter, scoring 12 points, ultimately totaling to 22, I believe. So having a balanced attack of 4 20-plus scorers ultimately showed the world that, hey, the Raptors did have Kawhi, obviously, as a superstar that can put them over the edge, but you still need critical pieces to bring you over the hump to ultimately win a championship.
Yeah, let's just hit that quickly. Fred VanVleet, 22 points, 5 of 11 from the 3, and obviously had that epic scream that turned into a meme afterwards with, you know... Band-aid on under his eye. Not look like he was in a hockey fight. My man was out there. That dad power was real in this one.
Yeah, shout out to Quinn Cook chasing down Ibaka down and leaving Fleet wide open at the top of the three-point. That was hilarious. That was an ultimate breakdown, defensive breakdown. I think that's what changed it.
Yeah, I would love to chase down Serge Ibaka of all people. Get out of here. Any closing thoughts, guys? Obviously, Fatah and Josh, this is your time to shine.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a moment that I've been for my entire life, right? So the fact that I was able to see the results of all the pain, the blood, sweat, and tears from being a fan, right, to ultimately seeing the goal being achieved of winning a championship was obviously surreal and obviously emotional to a certain degree. And, you know, being able to celebrate it with the rest of the Raptors fans, not only in Toronto, but across the world in Toronto, at the parade, I believe it was like three days later, just goes to show like how big of a fan base the Raptors have and how passionate they are and happy to the fact that they won a championship. And this is something new. I mean, when you win a championship, you build that championship DNA. You come to a point where you start to understand the grind and how long and what it takes to win a championship. And I feel like that's what's helping the Raptors now in this year, in this season, without Kawhi Leonard, right? They know exactly what it takes to win a championship with the perfect mix of veterans and supporting cast. Even without a superstar, it might be difficult, but at least you have the foundation and understanding to continue that trend. So, not only was I happy then, but I'm also happy of the residual effect that it has now. So, I'm hoping that the Raptors can obviously repeat in Orlando. And then hopefully have a social distancing parade in Toronto, whether it be in downtown or virtually. It's up to Doug Ford if he wants to uplift the phase one to phase two. We'll see about that.
Oh no, it's gonna be another wave, man.
Anyway. Yeah, man. If I can live to see a second championship before, that's all I need. I'll quarantine for the rest of my life if I have to.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, for me, I mean, going from watching Kevin O'Neal ball in that we were watching Michael Curry play small forward and seeing this team score 75 points a game during that season, it was just brutal. And, you know, years later, now getting to see this, I think that we've built up to a point of we're going to have sustained excellence. And like Fado was saying, I think the next few years are going to be great for Raptors fans because we have the management in place that you can be confident in, you know, with Coach Nurse in game, obviously, and then, you know, Masai outside. Having the core that we already have, plus having cap space coming up. Like I've said it before, but I think we are the new age San Antonio Spurs in the past 20 years. I think that the next 10 to 20 years are going to be sustained excellence from this organization as long as we can keep both those guys there. And it's really fun to think about, and it's a great time to be a Raptors fan.
You're the man, Josh.
No, you are the man.
I just want to say that one member on this podcast did predict this, Raps 19, so kudos to him. And honestly, I've watched the most basketball in my life last year, and it was amazing to see the Raptors pull through. And it's just something that you'll always remember the first, even if the Raptors, like Josh said, have sustained excellence. I think the games against Philly, the series against Milwaukee, all those questions around the series with Golden State, we're going to remember for a very long time, if not forever. So Raps, hopefully 2020 in Orlando.
Well, you guys are so optimistic, man. Yeah. Okay. Before one word answer, I guess two names. Who is your favorite Raptor of all time? Fada.
Damn, it's tough. honestly, I'll probably say Vince Carter.
Okay.
Because he was the first guy to kind of get me into my Raptors fandom.
Josh?
Not DeMar DeRozan.
Is that answer? Give us a name.
I mean,
man.
I would have to go with Kawhi. I've always loved Kawhi, just having him on the team even for 1 year. He's my favorite all time. Before that, I would have said Michael Curry, but, you know, that was Kawhi.
This guy loves Michael Curry. Jesus Christ.
No. I would have said probably Alvin Williams before that.
Hey.
How about Aaron and Eric Williams?
Oh, God. Don't remind me.
Alonzo Mourning.
Actually, Joey Graham was sort of fun to watch. Just seeing how robotic he was. It was
a good time. Damn, that was going to be my guy.
Like, all the jokes that, like, me and my friend Kevin had with Joey Graham throughout the years was just fantastic. We always thought that, like, eventually he would, like, grow out of his roboticism and become a more fluid player, and then he just never did.
Became like, more of a robot.
Too many puzzles, man. Ronnie Coleman on the court.
I have an honorable mention, Jorge Garbosa.
Oh, I love Jorge. Yeah. Smoking Jorge at halftime.
Jorge was actually going to be my guy. He was going to be my pick. That injury really broke my heart.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who can smoke cigarettes at halftime then shut down Carmelo Anthony in his prime was just a soldier. True legend.
All right, Raj, who's your name? Give us somebody good.
I got to go with JYD.
Ah, classic.
Great guy.
Yeah, classic Toronto staple right there. All right, that's all the time we've got for this week. Fada, thank you again for coming back. It's always a blast talking Raptors with you, man. We gotta get you back once Orlando comes around.
Yeah, absolutely. Once again, I appreciate you guys bring me on. I always love talking hoops, so especially with you guys. So keep going.
Beautiful. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember, rate and subscribe. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor, Google Play, all the major podcast platforms. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.